He traced a cross on the thing's brow.
Amen,
said Hildegard. Dietrich rose and brushed his habit off, wondering whether he had committed sacrilege. Held heaven a place for such creatures? Maybe. Had they souls? He could make nothing of the injured one's featureless gaze, could not indeed know if it was gazing or not, as there were no lids to the faceted hemispheres. The others had not turned a head while he gave their fellow a conditional baptism, yet he had the uneasy feeling that they were all looking directly at him. Their strange, bulging eyes did not move, could not move, he guessed. Discovered now, what would these creatures do? That they had sought to remain hidden boded well, for their unnatural presence, demonic or not, must remain secret. Yet they had built themselves a house on the hare's land. So it seemed that they meant to stay, and no secret could keep forever. 2. Now, Tom. Tom Schworin was no hermit. He was the sort of man who liked company, and while hardly boisterous, he enjoyed a song and a drink, and there were clubs in town where he had once been a known man. That was before he met Sharon, of course. It would not be fair to call Sharon a wet blanket, but she did put a damper on things. This is not entirely bad. Carbon rods are dampers, too, and to good purpose. There had been something frivolous about Tom before she took him in hand. A grown man ought not wear so much grease paint. Sharon put a stop to that, mostly, and some of her seriousness had rubbed off on him. So Tom, when on the scent, could give a credible imitation of a hermit, albeit one with a more chatty disposition than most. He liked to make his ideas real, and this meant talking about them aloud. Sharon usually played the unwilling role of ear, often very unwillingly, as on that particular evening. But it was the talking that mattered, not the hearing. Tom would have talked to himself in a pinch, and sometimes did. He knew quite well that he had been thrown out of the apartment. He was not especially alert to the subtle cues of human relationships, but it was hard to miss the old heave-ho. And a man need not be particularly sensitive to feel a little vexed over the matter. Visiting the archives really was the sensible thing to do when seen from the clear, cold heights of logic. But logic wasn't in it. The medieval collection in the Telio Memorial Library had started with a small art collection housed in a gallery decorated to resemble a medieval hall. There were some fine pieces there, triptychs, altar fronts, and the like. There followed Bibles, psalters, and other incunabulum, pipe rolls and cartularians, registers and estate papers, ledgers and accounts, the raw materials of history, primary sources bought at auctions, or found in troves, or bestowed by tax-weary donors, never edited, never published, grouped loosely by source into folders, tied in stacks between pieces of heavy cardboard, and hidden away to await a scholar sufficiently desperate to wade through them. They had been lying in wait for Tom, and had caught him fair. Tom had prepared a list. He was not the methodical sort, but even he knew better than to dive headfirst into uncharted waters. He didn't know what he was looking for, but he did know what sort of thing he was looking for, and that was half the battle. So he scrutinized the contents of each carton, setting aside certain documents for more careful perusal. Along the way, he acquired stray bits of the trivium and the quadrivium, for he was the sort of man who cannot look up one thing without, in the process, finding half a dozen other things. In this manner, the sun grew long and passed into evening. Amidst the chaff, already winnowed, lay by that time but a single grain of wheat, a note in a 17th-century index of episcopal court cases that De rerum Eiffel Hymensis, the matter of the baptism of one Johannes Stern, wayfarer, had been mooted by the death through pestilence of all the principals. This index had been compiled in part from an earlier 15th century index, based in turn on long-lost 14th century originals. Not exactly hot on the trail. He closed his eyes and rubbed his forehead and contemplated surrender. He might have packed it in then, had it not been for a nudge from an unlikely direction. "You know, Dr. Schworen," said the nudge, "we don't get many live ones in here." Paul on the Damascus Highway could not have been more startled, apprehending a sudden voice. The librarian who had dutifully shopped cartons for him all night in silent obscurity stood by the table with the carton he had just finished braced against her hip. She was a fine-featured woman, decked with a long print dress and adorned by large plain glasses. Her hair met behind her in a tight bun.
"Lieber Gott," Tom thought, "an archetype."
Aloud he said, "I beg your pardon?" The librarian flushed. "Usually researchers phone their requests in. One of the staff scans it into the computer, charges the cost against the appropriate grant, and that's that. It can be terribly lonely, especially at night, when all we do is wait for requests from overseas. I try to read everything I scan, and there's my own research, of course, that helps some." That was the nexus. A lonely librarian wanted a human conversation, and a lonely cryologist needed a break from his fruitless hunt. Otherwise, no words at all might have passed between the two of them that whole night.
"I needed to get out of the apartment for a while," Tom said.
"Oh," the young woman told him. "I'm glad you came. I've been following your researches." Historians do not normally acquire groupies.
"Why on earth would you do that?" Tom said in surprise.
"I majored in analytical history under Dr. LeBray at Massachusetts, but differential topology was too tough for me, so I switched to narrative history instead."
Tom felt much as a molecular biologist might upon encountering a natural philosopher. Narrative history wasn't science, it was literature. "I remember my own problems with Tom's catastrophic surfaces," he ventured. "Sit down, please. You're making me nervous."
She remained standing, hip-shot with the carton.
"Oh, I don't mean to keep you from your work. I only wanted to ask you..."
She hesitated.
"Oh, it's probably obvious."
"What is?"
"Well, you're researching a village called Eiffelheim."
"Yes. The site is an unexplained void in the crystallar grid." That was a deliberate test on Tom's part. He wanted to see what she would make of it. She raised her eyebrows.
"Abandoned and never resettled?"
Tom nodded confirmation. "And yet," she mused, "the locus must have had affinity or it would never have been occupied in the first place. Perhaps a nearby site... No? That is odd. Perhaps their mines were depleted. Their water dried up?" Tom smiled, delighted at her perception as much as her interest. He'd had a difficult time convincing Sharon that there even was a problem, and all she'd come up with was a common cause like the Black Death. This young woman at least knew enough to suggest local causes. After he explained his problem, the librarian frowned. "Why haven't you searched for information from before the village's disappearance? Whatever caused its abandonment must have occurred earlier." He swatted the carton. "That's why I'm here. Don't teach your grandmother to suck eggs." She ducked her head to the storm.
"But you've never referenced Oberhochwald, so I..."
"Oberhochwald?" He shook his head in irritation. "Why Oberhochwald?"
"Well, that was Eiffelheim's original name."
"What?" He stood sharply, knocking the heavy reading chair backward. It hit the floor with a bang, and the librarian dropped her carton, folders skittering across the floor. She clapped a hand to her mouth, then stooped to gather them up. Tom darted around the table. "Never mind those now," he said. "It was my fault. I'll pick them up. Just tell me how you know that about Oberhochwald."
Lifting her to her feet, he was surprised at how short she was. Sitting, he had thought her taller.
She pried her arm from his grasp. "We'll both pick them up," she told him. She set the carton on the floor and dropped to her hands and knees. Tom knelt beside her, handed her a folder. "Are you certain about this Oberhochwald place?" She stacked three folders into the carton and looked at him, and he noticed that her eyes were large and brown.
"You mean you didn't know?"
"I learned only by accident, but I thought you... Well, it was a month ago, I think. A brother in the theology school asked me to find a rare manuscript for him and scan it into the database.
The name Eiffelheim caught my eye because I had already scanned several items for you. It was a marginal gloss on the name Oberhochwald. Tom paused with several more folders in his hand. What was the context?
I don't know. I read Latin, but this was in German.
Oh, if I'd only known, I would have sent you an email about it, but I thought...
Tom placed a hand on her arm. You didn't do anything wrong. Do you have it here? The manuscript the brother asked for? I need to see it.
The original is at Yale.
A copy is fine.
Yes, I was about to ask you that. We kept a copy of the PDF scan in our own database, and DF Imaging comes in once a month and organizes the archives for us. I can call it up.
Could you do that for me, Bitazar? I mean, pretty please? I'll finish this.
He reached under the table to retrieve another wayward folder.
Hot damn! Another blow struck for serendipity.
He piled two more folders atop the ones he had.
No wonder he hadn't found any contemporary references to Eiffelheim. It hadn't been called Eiffelheim yet.
He glanced at the librarian, busy at the keyboard in her office.